football today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Let's go.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
All right, we got a Thursday show for you on June 28th. Should be a fun one. We are talking about some of Heath's breakouts. This time, for realsies, we are going to talk about ACL injuries because, by the way, Dalvin Cook is one of Heath's breakouts. And we'll talk about the history of players coming back from ACL tears. And Dave is back from jury duty to give us a schedule analysis for fantasy purposes. Welcome back, juror number 8.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. And what an experience I had.
Yeah?
Yeah. You want to hear about it?
You can't talk about it.
Oh, yes, I can. It's over.
It's illegal.
Can we hear about it after we do the Twitter poll?
Yeah, you can hear about it whenever you want.
All right, let's start with a little fantasy football talk, and then we'll get into the legal system a little bit, as I think Dave is eyeing that Supreme Court seat, in my opinion. But the question was, which of these three running backs has the most upside? Which has the most downside? So the three running backs were Devontae Freeman, LeSean McCoy, and Jordan Howard. They are back-to-back-to-back in Heath Cummings' rankings. So Devontae Freeman, LeSean McCoy, Jordan Howard. Who has the most upside, guys? First give me your answer, then tell me what you think the Twitter respondents said.
I would assume the Twitter respondents said Devontae Freeman. I would say that it's difficult to not say Devontae Freeman since he's already had a season where he was the number one running back in fantasy.
Yeah, but has he ever had a season better than LeSean McCoy's best season? Because even that number one... It's a question. I honestly don't know. That number one running back season was like the worst season for running backs ever.
Last season, Freeman was the worst of the three.
Okay. Well, you're right, Heath. They did say.
Good. That's all you really need. Can we just get that? Can you record that, please?
Devontae Freeman did have the most upside, according to Twitter followers. We had about 1,600 people vote on that, 1,700 vote on that. What's your answer, guys? Who do you think is the most upside, Freeman, McCoy, or Howard?
If things were better in Buffalo, McCoy is your winner, and it's not even close. But because I feel like the situation is really bad for pretty much everybody in Buffalo except kind of sort of Kelvin Benjamin, I can't say that he's got the most upside. I think it's still Freeman.
I will say that it is Freeman in standard and McCoy in PPR.
And I don't want to discount Jordan Howard, which is starting to happen a little bit. I think people are getting scared of him. Top 15 finishes each of the last 2 years. Top 10 finishes in standard each of the last 2 years, I should say. Top 15 in PPR. And he's going to get the ball. Like, Chicago isn't going to get away from giving him carries. He is going to be their lead back. I don't think it's going to be a 50-50 split at all with Tariq Cohen. I do think there will be some games where the Bears decide, you know what, it's probably better if we throw this week. We're running into a tough matchup. They're playing at Green Bay week one. That might be perfect for that. But later on as the season unfolds, you're going to see some huge games from Jordan Howard.
I think Jordan Howard's going to be way underrated. And he's one of the reasons that I feel comfortable taking receivers with my first two picks.
Okay.
Because I'm okay with Jordan Howard in the third round being my number one running back.
Can I ask you something about that? Are you targeting two receivers with your first two picks no matter where your draft
slot is? No, not at all.
Like, if you've got an early draft slot, you're still going to take one of those.
In writing up our pick-by-pick series, which will be on the website next week, I believe, maybe even Friday.
They are clutch, by the way.
They are clutch.
Like, if you're picking sixth, it's detailed advice just for you.
I think there were only 3 of the 8 teams I drafted where I started receiver. Most of them were fairly balanced. There was even one team, Dave, where I took 3 running backs.
I know that team because I played off it with my draft selections to try and hurt you a little bit.
Cool.
I did take one of my teams. I went receiver with one of my teams, and I really liked how my team wound up.
I think it works best after pick 7 or 8.
So question.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, because you want to get, right, yeah, I get that. You want to get.
You don't want to leave the stud running backs on the board.
All right, question is this. Are you okay with Jordan Howard in round 3 going receiver Jordan Howard in PPR? Because he's probably going to catch the fewest balls of the three that we just talked about, Freeman, McCoy, and Howard.
That would have to be a situation where I had like the 11 or 12 pick, and I really think you can probably get Jordan Howard in the 4th in PPR.
Okay. Okay.
Are we assuming that Freeman and McCoy are off the board?
Yeah, I would think so.
So then beggars can't be choosers, right? It's round three. I need a running back. I've already taken
but
two wide
receivers.
But are you
okay with it?
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
All right, so let's go to the next part of this poll. Who has the most downside? And by the way, the results were 48% Freeman has the most upside. 48% Freeman, 29% Howard, 23% LeSean McCoy. So,
Oh, I know how to answer this one.
2,100 people voted on this poll. Who has the most downside, Freeman, McCoy, or Howard?
It's got to be McCoy,
obviously.
See, I would vote Howard. I would vote Howard because McCoy was really like not that good last year. You know, he was a little disappointing. He was frustrating for owners. He was the number seven running back in fantasy.
Yeah, he averaged over 12 fantasy points per game standard or non-PPR.
I just think that there's no chance that McCoy gets phased out of the offense. He is the offense. There is a chance that Howard gets phased out in the same way that like Devontae Freeman kind of got phased out last year, believe it or not, because about half his games, he had less than 12 carries or 12 or fewer, which
but
is just
a lot of those games came after the concussion when they were easing him back in.
I don't think that was a phasing out. I'll take a look, but I don't think so, Dave. I think it was somewhat evenly distributed. He either had 18 or more or 12 or less. It was the strangest thing.
And I think anybody that drafts LeSean McCoy will be pretty happy if him getting phased out results in a Devontae Freeman season from last year.
By the way, I'm sorry, say that again?
Anybody that drafts LeSean McCoy will be just fine if his downside is Devontae Freeman last year.
Devontae Freeman was 18th in non-PPR and 14th in PPR, so
In 14 games.
Yeah, and actually, to be quite honest, in 13 games, as he barely played against Dallas. He had two carries, then he left. So, yeah, you're right. But Freeman was also frustrating because when Devontae Freeman, in 9 games with 12 or fewer carries, and it really wasn't concussion-related, in 9 games with 12 or fewer carries, he averaged 40 rushing yards per game. He scored one rushing touchdown, and he scored double-digit fantasy points in non-PPR once, and that was week 17, one time in 9 games. In 5 games with 18 or more carries, he averaged 93 rushing yards per game, scored 6 of his 7 rushing touchdowns. So Devontae Freeman just needs the work, but Tevin Coleman's still there, and they didn't really give us a pattern last year. It was a guessing game. All right, so McCoy did win the poll. He has the most downside, according to the Twitter followers, 51% Sean McCoy. 37% Jordan Howard, 12% Devontae Freeman. And you guys agree? It's McCoy you think has the most downside?
I try on these polls for downside to just assume that everybody's playing 16 games.
Right.
It's harder to do that with McCoy. But if we're assuming 16 games, I would say McCoy has the most downside in non-PPR. Howard has the most downside in PPR.
Okay.
I kind of fell for the bait. We're not supposed to factor in injury risk with these? Because if you factor in injury risk, it's LeSean McCoy all the way.
So, okay, all right.
But if you're guaranteeing 16 games from Shady, maybe he does have a little more upside than Howard.
Here's my stance on the injury thing. I'm assuming they're healthy week one. Because this originally came up where it was maybe like Deshaun Watson or Dalvin Cook, somebody who currently has an injury. So I think whenever I put a poll up, if you want to vote in it, you can follow us. I'm at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R. Dave is at Dave Richard. Heath is at Heath Cummings Sr. at Heath Cummings SR. Jamie is at Jamie Eisenberg, J-A-M-E-Y. You can follow us. If you vote on it's just, okay, if you want to say that McCoy's injury prone and that's why he has the most downside, I get that. But just assume they're all going to be healthy for week one. I guess that's how I'd approach it going forward. All right, I got a trivia question for you. Who were the top two running backs in rushing yards per game last year? Yards per game. Rushing yards per game. Who were the top two?
Minimum how many games?
Not telling you. Minimum minimum 2 games.
Minimum two games. Sounds like a super useful. I will say Ezekiel Elliott.
Okay. I'll tell you this. They're all going in the first 3 rounds. They're both going in the first 3 rounds.
Ezekiel Elliott and Dalvin Cook.
Dave, do you have a guess?
No, not off the top of my head. I mean, Gurley makes a lot of sense. I know he had a lot of monster games. Kareem Hunt led the league in rushing. I'll say those 2 guys.
You are wrong on both. Heath was right on both. Good job, Heath.
That's three times Adam has said Heath is right already on this podcast. This is the best podcast I've ever been a part of.
Yeah, so Heath is right. Now he will appear in a mirror near you. Yes, I was surprised by that. Ezekiel Elliott won and Dalvin Cook too. I'm going to go ahead and assume that Ezekiel Elliott also led in carries per game because he just got a ton of work. And we're going to talk about Dalvin Cook as a breakout, as part of the ACL Recovery Club. I also want you to get our newsletters. They'll come right into your email inbox. They are free. They are awesome. You can get all of the advice that you want and need from Dave, from Jamie, from Heath. Here's how you sign up. You go to cbssports.com/FFT Daily. We actually have several newsletters, so I believe it's cbssports.com/newsletters. Maybe it's just newsletter. But cbssports.com/FFT Daily is how you can subscribe in less than a minute. You should watch CBS Sports HQ on the free CBS Sports app. Everything's free. Watch CBS Sports HQ. It's news, scores, highlights. It's old school sports coverage. Real sports fans, fantasy fans, you will love it. CBS Sports HQ. And our fantasy product has launched. You can sign up for your leagues now. This is really, guys, the best place to play. I mean, we're all obviously biased, but we play all over the place. And obviously, I prefer CBS, but I really think that you will too. We've made it really good for dynasty leagues. You can trade picks up to 3 years in advance. You can do your rookie drafts on CBSSports.com. And I think the thing that, one thing I like is schedule flexibility. You can create an in-depth league schedule. You can play multiple games per period. Like, I have a baseball league right now. We play two opponents every week. But one thing that I think the guys are really proud of on the product side, the in-app commissioner tools are much better. If you want to start playing on our website, please go to cbssports.com/FFT. So I gave you two URLs, cbssports.com/FFT Daily for the newsletter, cbssports.com/FFT to just start playing some fantasy football. cbssports.com/Dave's Jury Duty to learn more about that.
Well, I don't know how much there is to learn. I like jury duty. I've done it once before. Actually sent a guy to prison as a foreman of a jury. It wasn't my decision. There were 11 other people, but we all agreed.
So it was your decision.
Yeah, it was.
I was part of the decision.
Heath is right. It was your decision.
This is becoming too good of a podcast for Heath. I had to be there by 7:45. My name went into the jury pool. I sat in a room with 300 of my closest friends from Broward County. And 4 hours later, they dismissed us and said, you can go home.
Oh, all right. So it wasn't much of a story then.
I think it's the best case scenario for jury duty.
Yeah,
where
that's pretty nice.
You go and you don't get called in to be part of a jury, and they excuse you before lunchtime.
And you don't get to send anyone to prison.
Yeah, I feel better about that.
Good.
And I'm off the hook for a long time.
So let's talk about schedules, Dave. Who's got the favorable fantasy schedules?
So first of all, figuring out how this process works, I took every defense, I studied every defense, I graded every defense based on pass rush, pass coverage, and run defense. So three critical factors for each team, and gave them a grade. And you know, the tough defenses like the Rams, the Vikings, they're obviously going to appear harder on team schedules than, say, the Colts, who I think have the worst defense in the league on paper right now. Plug that into the schedule and added a couple other quirks. Like if a team is playing on the road against another team that's coming off of a bye, teams playing on the road 3 weeks in a row, stuff like that. And basically it spit out what the overall grade was for a team's schedule. And long story short, I've got the Jaguars with the easiest schedule in the league, followed by the Patriots, the Texans, the Dolphins, and the Titans. Five toughest schedules.
Let me repeat the good ones.
Go ahead.
Jacksonville, New England, Houston, Miami, and Tennessee. Jacksonville, New England, Houston, Miami, Tennessee. So I guess the AFC South and the AFC East there. Some good stuff. Your top five schedules.
Right. Now the bottom five schedules belong to Kansas City, Pittsburgh, Seattle, San Francisco, and Arizona. I also have a breakdown on which teams have the easiest schedules versus the run and versus the pass.
Okay, let me read the bottom five again. Five worst schedules. Kansas City has the worst. Pittsburgh, Seattle, San Francisco, Arizona. Kansas City, Pittsburgh, Seattle, San Francisco, Arizona. So, and Dave, this is all on the website, correct?
It's all on the website, and I've broken down every team's schedule by division.
So, all right, well, that makes me feel better about Leonard Fournette. So now you're saying the Jaguars have the best schedule, the Chiefs and Steelers have the worst two schedules, so clearly we're taking Fournette over Le'Veon Bell.
Well, that's the thing, is I don't think this is supposed to be the backbone of fantasy analysis. I'd like to think of this as a tiebreaker. When you're in not round one, but round three on, and you're debating between two players, especially if they're at the same position, you can go to this ranking and you could see, oh, well, Sammy Watkins' schedule against the pass is dead last. It's the toughest. And I'll throw out, who would you debate him with if you're in round six? Give me a name, guys. Somebody that you would compete with Sammy Watkins
Chris
for a pick in round six.
Chris Hogan.
Chris, that's a great one. Chris Hogan has the fourth easiest schedule. So if you can't decide between Hogan's and Watkins, you can look at this and you know that Hogan's got the better schedule and you can draft Hogan based on that.
Can you now seriously debate Leonard Fournette versus Kareem Hunt?
You could, based on this.
Yeah.
You look at the rundown of the Chiefs' schedule this year, and they're playing a first-place schedule. Their division's got much tougher defenses than what Jacksonville's got. So, and listen, a lot of it is weighted because I gave Indianapolis poor grades, and I don't think Tennessee's run defense is that great. Houston's defense is going to bounce back. So that's two matchups that Jacksonville is going to have to deal with that's harder than it was in 2017.
All right. Check it out on the website on cbssports.com/fantasy. I want to move on because today is sort of a mailbag/voicemail episode. fantasyfootball@cbsi.com, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. That is our email address. And the voicemail, if you want to leave us a voicemail, 954-689-3199. 954-689-3199. Go ahead and leave us your name and city. You can give us a greeting if you'd like, and a question. Preferably no keeper questions. If they are keeper questions, please keep them simple. Some news and notes. Andrew Luck remains pain-free as he increases his workload. That is good. Jameis Winston is officially suspended for 3 games. Is Jameis Winston worth drafting, in your opinions?
No.
I'm really conflicted on this because I understand Dave's point of view. We've already had this discussion. My thing is, and I talked Jameis up a lot before this suspension in terms of his potential in fantasy football only. And I do think that he has top five potential when he returns from the suspension. He was fantastic on a per game basis last year in the games that he played and finished. So I guess it really comes more down to your league type. We get jaded a little bit here because in our drafts, it's really rare. Maybe two or three people draft two quarterbacks and they fall and fall and fall. And we get Drew Brees in the 9th round and Ben Roethlisberger in the 10th or 11th round. That's probably not the reality for a majority of fantasy football leagues out there.
Sure.
And so in a majority of those leagues, I do think it's worth that roster spot to hold on to Jameis Winston for 3 weeks because it's not hard to find somebody to stream quarterbacks for 3 weeks. And when he comes back, I fully expect he's going to be a number one quarterback.
Here's the problem. Not only do you have to find a replacement for the first 3 weeks of the season, you also have to find a replacement for week 5 because the Bucs are on bye. And there's no guarantee that you're going to want to start Jameis by the time you get to week 4. So put yourself in this situation, Heath. It's week 4. The other quarterback you drafted with Winston is dominating, and you need help at another position.
Sounds like a great problem to have.
But you're cutting Jameis Winston. Like, he's going to be the least valuable member of
if
your fantasy
If you draft
team.
Jameis Winston, you're drafting him in the 12th round, 13th round, or later, depending on how deep your draft is. There is a very good chance you're cutting whoever you drafted in the 12th or 13th round. I hope not. I hope I hit the lottery and I've got a starter with that pick. But I'm willing to take that chance with that pick on top 5 upside at quarterback.
But I want to take a chance on someone who could impact my team sooner.
That's understandable.
And that's why I'm going to let you draft Jameis Winston.
I appreciate that.
And I'm going to wait for you to cut Jameis Winston And by the time week five comes around, you probably won't have him on your team. And if I need a quarterback, I'm running to get him because the schedule for Tampa Bay.
And I think that's kind of an argument for drafting him.
Yeah, but then you got to be patient.
Everybody's running to get him.
But then you got to be patient.
Or you've got to win the fab battle.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know that everybody's going to be.
But I don't know if that's going to be like that expensive of a
battle. Yeah, a lot of people are just going to be set at quarterback and won't spend money. Heath is wrong. sorry, I had to say it at least once. Yeah, a lot of people are going to be set at quarterback. But no, Jamie and I talked about this when we did the bonus podcast episode. You're not starting him in weeks 1 through 3, obviously. Week 4 is at Chicago. Maybe that'll be a nice start. Week 5 is a bye. Week 6 is at Atlanta, and I personally think Atlanta's going to have a very good defense this year, so that doesn't really feel like a start to me. It might be that you're not wanting to start Jameis Winston until week 7 against Cleveland, but we'll let the listeners decide if they want to draft Jameis. And the Chiefs are moving Sammy Watkins all over the field. They're going to use him a little bit differently than we've seen Watkins used in the past. Yeah, be pretty interesting to see what happens between Watkins and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and everybody.
Could he be one of those fantasy players who, and you know what, everyone's going to say that he can because everybody knows him to be like this. He's not consistent. He's going to be one of those fantasy players that you draft, you start most weeks as a number 3 receiver or a flex, and you just hope for the best. It doesn't even matter who he's playing. And then there's going to be a week where he gives you 15 fantasy points, and then the next week he gives you 3. But you start him just on his upside. It's kind of like what you did with Brandon Cooks last year. Once you run out of those consistent, reliable fantasy receivers, you gravitate toward the ones with high upside, almost regardless of their matchup.
Right.
I do have a funny note. Sammy has posted double digits in fantasy points in consecutive weeks 5 times in 4 years.
Wow. Wow. That is annoying. Best
right.
ball if I've ever heard it before.
Sure. Sure.
You guys missed the stat I gave out on the previous show on Tuesday. There were like 6 or 7 quarterbacks who had two top 12 pass catchers. So either 2 top 12 wide receivers or 2 top 12 or a top 12 receiver and a top 12 tight end and a running back who caught 50 or more passes. And all of them finished top 13, last year. That includes the Minnesota quarterbacks, their combined points. So it was Russell Wilson. He didn't have the 50-plus catch, but he was number 1 with 2 top 12 pass catchers. Tom Brady, Alex Smith, Phillip Rivers, Matthew Stafford, and the Minnesota quarterbacks. It's a very, very good combination for fantasy. And
so that's good for Mahomes and Eli Manning.
And Eli Manning, yeah. That's kind of what we were discussing on yesterday's show, or Tuesday's show. All right, so one thing that kind of jumped out to me, the history of older players coming back from ACLs. And it really was about Julian Edelman. But one of Heath's breakouts is Dalvin Cook, and he's coming back from an ACL injury himself. So I looked at the last 4 years of data, courtesy of the ACL Recovery Club on Twitter. Not a club I want to be in at any point, but kind of, you know, an interesting thing. So who came back from ACL injuries? How did they do? It's not that big of a sample size, but really, it seems like the older guys struggled a little bit. Like, Keenan Allen came back from an ACL injury last year. He got hurt in week 1, and he was awesome. He was the number 3 wide receiver in fantasy. He did, however, kind of take a little while to get going. His first 9 games, he had 596 yards and 1 touchdown. His last 7 games, he had 797 yards and 5 touchdowns. The year before that, we had 2 wide receivers coming back from August ACL injuries, didn't even make it to the regular season. Kelvin Benjamin and Jordy Nelson. Kelvin Benjamin, he was okay in 2016. He had 941 yards and 7 touchdowns. Jordy Nelson ended up as the number 2 wide receiver in non-PPR and the number 3 wide receiver in PPR. You can, however, look at what Jordy Nelson did. And he tore his ACL in what would have been his age 30 season. And Edelman tore his ACL in what would have been his age 31 season. Jordy Nelson, his yards per catch was down a lot, significantly, in fact. And his first 6 games, he was bad. He averaged 54 yards per game. Per game in his first 6 games. People were talking about dropping Jordy Nelson after that Thursday night game against the Bears. And then he turned it on his last 10 games. He averaged 94 yards per game and he had 9 touchdowns in those 10 games. But, you know, really it was like he just kind of got, I don't want to say lucky, but he really benefited from a lot of touchdowns. You guys can take a look at the notes I put together, but really, like, Vincent Jackson tore his ACL in 2016, played five games in 2017, and has disappeared. Jamal Charles tore his ACL, then he tore his meniscus the next year, but after the ACL injury, we never saw a good Jamal Charles again. Stephen Ridley, same thing, but, you know, he didn't really get a ton of work. It's a little bit scary when older running backs and wide receivers tear their ACLs. Younger guys, not really a huge deal. Quarterbacks, not really a huge deal. Carson Palmer showed that. Joe Flacco actually showed that. So I wouldn't worry too much.
Tom Brady and Phillip Rivers showed that once upon a time.
That was a while ago.
Yeah.
Wentz and Sean Watson, thank you. They're a little more mobile than those guys, but quarterbacks have come back well from it. But it's really given me a little bit of hesitation with Edelman. The only thing I'll say is he is back and practicing really early, and the other guys weren't.
But he's not a full participant yet, correct?
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
My other thing I would say about Julian Edelman is, what does he thrive on? It's lateral agility. It's quickness in small spaces. Those are the I don't worry so much about somebody regaining their top speed after an ACL injury, because that's not really a concern. But he has to be able to cut and accelerate in the ways that he has in the past. I was already out on Julian Edelman, so I'm probably biased in the first place, but I think you've given us some very conclusive evidence here.
Not quite sure about conclusive. All right, we got coming up a fun Twitter poll. We're going to put another first-round pick under a microscope. It will be Michael Thomas, who's a borderline first-round pick. And let's talk about Heat's breakouts, starting with Dalvin Cook. And we do have a Dalvin Cook voicemail. I will play it, though, after you give your analysis of Dalvin Cook. Please give your analysis of Dalvin Cook.
If Dalvin Cook was 100% healthy, didn't have any concern over the ACL injury, he would be my number one sophomore running back. Maybe number two behind Kareem Hunt. But I'd have him ahead of Leonard Fournette. I'd have him ahead of Christian McCaffrey. I'd have him ahead of Alvin Kamara. Dalvin Cook looked amazing last year in his first 3.5 games as a rookie. He's a complete running back. There's no concern about him having to come off the field for something. The Vikings offense should be extremely efficient with Kirk Cousins under center. We know he likes to target his running backs in the passing game. I think we could be looking at a 1,600-yard season with 10 touchdowns.
Wow.
Yep.
I mean, that's huge. I don't know if I'm expecting that much, but I agree that I think he's got a chance to be very, very special. I remember the coaching staff, and it's most of the same coaching staff still in Minnesota, just being enamored with Cook during training camp. Every day you'd read something about how they think he's special. They were using words that they don't normally use to talk about players when they talked about Dalvin Cook. And Mike Zimmer, like, that's what tipped me off, is that Mike Zimmer typically is not very excited about players, and he was like a proud papa when it came to Dalvin Cook. And when he went down, it was defeating for Minnesota, but they still got by. He is in a spot where the Vikings defense is better. They should be able to be in a lot of situations where they're going to be at least balanced offensively, if not a little more run-centric, which does worry me a little bit about Kirk Cousins' upside, but it creates big potential for Dalvin Cook, who is, like Heath said, a do-it-all running back, good schedule in front of him and in front of the Vikings this year. It's just a matter of him staying healthy. Good offensive line.
Yep.
They changed offensive coordinators, but the guy they brought in is John DeFilippo, and I think he's going to be very, very good for them. And I'm trying to get this guy in a lot of my drafts, and I end up not getting him.
So let me play this voicemail. Here we go. 954-689-3199. No name, unfortunately, on this. So, Dave, give me a name.
Paul.
From?
Brooklyn.
All right. Paul from Brooklyn, what do you have to say?
Hey, what's going on, Azer, little man? Quick question. It's a serious one. Dalvin Cook or Leonard Fournette? I see Cook as having upside, but obviously the injury scared me. He hasn't proven it before. I think Fournette's safer. Let me know, MPS. That guy that was saying McCaffrey? Hilarious. You should put that on a loop. Talk to you later. Peace out.
Yes, McCaffrey guy was very funny. I have more on that later on in the show. But the question was Cook or Fournette. What do you guys think?
I'm still taking Fournette. And they both have similar situations where they're on teams with great defenses. I would say that Jacksonville's offense will probably be a little more cautious than Minnesota's. Minnesota, I think, will let it rip sometimes. Jacksonville, I don't know if they're going to let it rip at all.
I think we get a little too in-depth with that kind of stuff. I think we overthink it a little bit. You know, the good defense, salt in the clock, or salt in the game away, that kind of thing. As long as they're not getting blown out, they're going to be in perfect opportunities to run the football. In fact, you look at Dalvin Cook last year. He played four games. He got huge workloads in three of them. The one time he didn't was a 15-point loss at the Steelers. That game kind of got away from them. But they're going to be competitive in every game. They should be anyway. So,
but I think that's part of the formula for a good fantasy running.
Yeah, it's a great thing, but I don't know. You start talking about, well, they're going to be leading, they're going to be doing this. If any team is, this is why I'm a little afraid of Fournette, Dave. I mean, if any team is going to be in blowouts on the wrong end of it, I really feel like the Jaguars could take a huge step. I'm going to be low on the Jaguars. A lot of people are going to be high on them. Their defense is going to be great. I think their offense could be total crap this year. That scares me a bit. And before this voicemail, I don't know. I guess I would have instinctually taken Fournette, but actually, no. I think I want Cook.
I have Cook ranked higher in both formats, and I question just a little bit the safety of Leonard Fournette. He has a growing list of foot/ankle injuries in his past. He's not somebody you should look at as bulletproof.
Yeah.
He's okay. Also not coming off of a torn ACL, though.
And just saying.
That's true.
Right.
Yes. You could say he's safer than Cook. I just wouldn't say he's safe.
I don't think he is. Like, I'm not worried about Cook's ACL injury. Until they give me reason to be worried about it, you know, let me see if I can take a look at the running backs who tore their ACL. Like, Danny Woodhead tore his ACL in 2016. And I think he was fine in 2017. He was fine on that one drive, and then he got hurt in week one, but he was older. Giovanni Bernard tore his ACL. He played 10 games in 2016 at age 26, and he tore his ACL, and he was better in 2017. I mentioned Jamaal Charles, but he was older, so, you know, he didn't have a very good follow-up. Deion Lewis, in 2015, he tore his ACL. He played 7 games. And then in 2016, he wasn't as good. His yards per carry were down, but they weren't bad. There aren't that many examples that I had. But yeah, I don't know. I like it, Heath. I'm all in. Dalvin Cook. Heath is right. Derrick Henry is a breakout for Heath.
Dave Richard is responsible for some of this breakout pick.
Yes.
I got a little bit scared when Deion Lewis was signed to his contract. And I still think Deion Lewis could be a good value in fantasy drafts, but I don't think this is a situation where Deion Lewis works his way into the DeMarco Murray role from last year and Derrick Henry is just stuck in fourth quarter pounder purgatory. I expect Derrick Henry is going to be the lead back on this team. He will share a little bit with Deion Lewis. But he's going to get an increase in workload. He's been very productive when he's gotten touches. I expect he's getting touches this year on a regular basis.
Can you quantify that? And if you can't, I can.
What would you like for me to quantify? How many touches?
Yes. What kind of touch?
You want to know the Jamie Eisenberg when he
touches
the
ball? That's kind
of
what I'm pointing
you.
That's the direction I'm pointing you.
I've got it. Would you like me to?
I've got it too. I just want to know if Heath had it.
No, I don't.
That's not my go-to.
Would you like to know it?
I would love those always intrigue me.
He has a 100% success rate of scoring a touchdown whenever he gets at least 14 carries in a game.
Oh, that's actually, I didn't have that. That's pretty cool. Derrick Henry, every time he gets 14 carries or more, he scored a touchdown. That's very cool. In the postseason, we finally got to see him kind of get cut loose. He had 23 carries, 156 yards, and a touchdown at Kansas City. He also had 2 catches for 35 yards. And then he did not do nearly as well at New England, 12 carries for 28 yards and 3 catches for 21 yards for Derrick Henry. Does he feel like a guy, though, that is going to be much more valuable in non-PPR compared to PPR?
Yes. Because I think in a perfect world, Tennessee is going to use Deion Lewis in that third down role.
Yeah, I'd guess he catches 25 or 30 passes this year.
All right,
that's not to say that Derrick Henry can't do it, because we have some evidence that he's a very good pass catcher.
Yeah.
The fear, if there's a fear, it's that they mix and match Henry and Lewis like the Falcons mix and match Freeman and Coleman. And you can't quite get a beat on who gets used when and how much.
But that still means 220 plus carries for Derrick Henry.
Should, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Heath. So then I'm just going to group the next four guys here. They're all pretty unproven. And I guess the question is, the situations are good, but are the players good? And by the way, there are more breakouts if you want to read. You can read Heath's column. I just picked six guys. Marlon Mack, Colts running back. San Francisco wide receiver Marquise Goodwin. Cowboys wide receiver Allen Hurns. And Baltimore tight end, rookie tight end Hayden Hurst. So Marlon Mack, Marquise Goodwin, Allen Hurns, and Hayden Hurst. I really think the question is, are these guys good? What do you think?
Well, I think Marquise Goodwin is a good one, a good receiver. He was phenomenal in those last five games with Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think he was terrible in week 17. That was a weird situation. I'm not going to worry about that too much. But he is obviously one of the fastest players in the NFL. And what he did in the second half last year, or really after Pierre Garçon went out, was he really showed that he was more than just a run by the other guy. He was running intermediate routes, and he was running them with success. He was getting a ton of targets from Jimmy Garoppolo. And there's already been some talk. I have a little bit of concern about just assuming that Pierre Garçon's going to come back at 32 years old and be as good as he was when he was 30. And there's already been some talk. Like, I expected kind of to see some things about, man, Jimmy Garoppolo and Pierre Garçon are really bonding this summer. And it's been more quotes from Garçon. It's going to take some work. It's going to take some time to get that connection. He's already got that connection with Marquise Goodwin. I think there's a much better chance than ADP presents that Goodwin is the number one receiver for the 49ers this year.
43 targets, 29 catches, 384 yards. That's 13.2 yards per catch and a touchdown, 67.4% catch rate for Goodwin from Garoppolo last year. Not bad.
Very good. But he was the only show in town. He was the only show in town. They got McKinnon now. They drafted a wide receiver in the second round. You got Pierre Garçon coming back from a neck injury. If it were an ACL injury, based on my research, I'd be very concerned.
Does he average 8 targets per game?
That seems like a lot. So yeah. How much is
I think that's too much. So I'm not as optimistic as Heath is, but we're taking Marquise Goodwin in the double-digit rounds, are we not?
I'll take him in the ninth. Yeah.
That's almost double-digit.
That's almost double-digit. And then Allen Hurns, like, I understand why you would question if he was good, but he, like, in 2015, he caught 61% of his passes from Blake Bortles. From Blake Bortles.
What did he do the rest of his career,
And averaged 16 yards per reception.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, you know, I love me some Miami Hurricanes, but I just don't know that Allen Hurns is
most
any better than Dez.
I don't think there's any question that he's the best receiver on the team. There are some people, Dave may be one of them, that thinks Michael Gallup is the guy.
Oh, there's definitely a question.
I don't. Terrence Williams is not any good at all.
I agree that Hurns is better than Terrence Williams, but we have no idea how good Michael Gallup's going to be. You have to at least say there's a question that Gallup could be better.
I don't have any question that this year Allen Hurns will be their best receiver.
I think I'm starting to feel
Michael Gallup may be better than him 3 years from now, or maybe even next year. But I don't think as a rookie Michael Gallup's going to come in and be better than Allen Hurns.
You mentioned that Hurns had a 61% catch rate from Bortles in 2015. He had a 69.6% catch rate from Blake Bortles in 2017. Didn't play a full season. In fact, he hasn't played a full season since his rookie year in 2014. But when he's on the field, I think he's going to end up being the go-to guy. And I think that the Cowboys are going to line him up all over the place.
Yeah,
because they don't have any other go-to guy. Witten's gone. Dez is gone. Everything's wide open. There's a chance he gets over 120 targets. I think this is a good one, Heath.
Dez had 133 last year, and Jason Witten had, how many did he have? It's 87 targets. So that's 220 targets, 132 catches, 1,400 yards, and 11 touchdowns. Again, 132, 1,400 yards, and 11 touchdowns on 220 targets gone between Dez Bryant and Jason Witten.
And so that's going to get split up amongst a lot of players.
Yeah.
I mean, Hurns is...
Oh, maybe Hurns will get all of it. 220 targets.
On an unrelated note, but kind of related to those targets. I wonder if maybe we are underestimating Ezekiel Elliott in PPR just a little bit.
I agree. I'm still pretty aggressive on him in PPR, but I think he can pick up a lot of the slack. I think he's going to get more catches. I think Hearns is now a candidate to get 120 targets. That'll change if Michael Gallup looks great in training camp in the preseason. And, you know, we hear some glowing remarks about him, or if somebody else steps up in Dallas. The tight ends are still going to play a pretty significant role. They've got some guys that might be able to do something. I mean, Deontay Thompson was on the podcast.
That's
or on
true.
The Pick Six podcast, right?
Yes, he was on the Pick Six podcast. Yes.
Okay, so
but he even acknowledged that he's a deep ball, take the top off the defense kind of guy. All right, so Hearns is going 145th overall. He's going after Cameron Meredith.
I'd much rather have Allen Hearns. Me too.
Okay, and then he's going ahead of Kenny Golladay and Paul Richardson.
Yep, I'm cool with that. I've got him behind Jordy, Marquise Goodwin, Devin Funchess.
All right, so I would love to talk about the other guys, but I want to move on just so we can get to the voicemails and the emails. I have not done a good enough job of that. The other two are Marlon Mack and Hayden Hurst, and I will just say this, that each of the last 2 years in the Baltimore offense, a tight end has been either first or second in targets and first or second in catches. So Joe Flacco's been throwing to his tight ends. All righty, we got another Twitter poll. So this came up on the Fantasy Baseball podcast today. A relief pitcher for the Diamondbacks named Archie Bradley, he's an excellent, excellent player. He admitted that before entering a game this year, he was using the bathroom and he pooped his pants. He pooped his pants before, and then he cleaned himself up a little bit, but he went in the game with poop pants. I don't know. So we got into it, obviously, on the baseball podcast, and, I put a Twitter poll up during the show, and it says, Archie Bradley admitted to pooping his pants before going in a game this year. Have you pooped your pants since turning 20 years old? Since turning 20 years old, have you done that? So option A is, yes, I pooped them. And option B is, no, of course not. And it just keeps getting closer and closer, because no was like 2/3 of the vote, which still was shockingly low to me. Like, it should be 95% no. 44% of people that have nearly 1,700 votes are saying that they have pooped their pants since turning 20 years old.
I appreciate the honesty of your Twitter audience, Adam.
And about 55% of your audience are liars.
That's ridiculous. Like, I 100% have not. This is disgusting. You're 20 years old. Maybe it's because I've never been drunk. I don't know.
Well, it's not necessarily that. What if you just can't find a bathroom and you really, you know,
the avalanche is coming. A lot of the things that could lead to pooping your pants, Adam does not participate in. I know it's a problem for some distance runners.
Like burrito eating?
Golfers have that problem. You're just too far from the bathroom. You can't make it in time. And drinking is a contributing factor, obviously.
But, I mean, I drink from time to time, and I never have any problems with
pooping
anything
your pants
below the waist.
Yeah,
I can always find a bathroom.
Dave is one of the 56%.
Also, I don't eat spicy food, so that helps, right?
Yeah, that could be a factor.
Well,
laziness, like you're in the middle of a fantasy draft and you don't want to miss your pick.
You don't play Fortnite, right?
I don't play Fortnite.
Fortnite could definitely, because there's no pause.
Right.
Oh.
So if you're deep Fortnite, in a game of Fortnite, you're in deep doo-doo.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So now that that's done with, you sick, sick people, let's put a first round pick.
You brought it up.
No, the sick people. Who said yes. I mean,
and I like, really, is it more likely that someone clicked yes and they've not pooped their pants, or someone clicked no and they actually have
and they just don't want to admit it to themselves?
It's over 50%.
But it's anonymous. I mean, it's
right,
anonymous.
Right, exactly. You might as well admit it if it's anonymous. One of my favorite wrestlers pooped his pants in the ring.
Really? Oh, yeah. I think I've seen that. Okay, here's an email to get us into our first round pick that we're putting under the microscope. It's from Scott in Chicago. Dear Deuce, Pierre, Reggie, and Ricky.
And when I heard Deuce, I thought we were still talking about the
poll.
Yeah, how
about that? Those are Saints running backs. Why is Michael Thomas considered a slam dunk top tier wide receiver? I'm not even going to read the rest of this. Scott, come on. Why shouldn't he be considered a slam dunk top tier wide receiver? Guys, this is the first round pick we're putting under the microscope. What is not to like about Michael Thomas?
I can't think of anything that's not to like. Other than Dave's got one. Go ahead, Dave.
He got off to a slow start last year, and I don't know if he's necessarily one of the top 10 or 12 players in fantasy football. I'm thinking you can probably find at least a dozen other guys that you'd take before Thomas.
I would say, if anything, Michael Thomas's fantasy production last year does not fully signify how good he was, because he only scored 5 touchdowns. The year before, he had 121 targets, caught 92 of them, which is just absurd, and scored 9 touchdowns. Last year, with more targets, more receptions, more yards, he only scored 5 times. If anything, I would expect a little bit of positive regression for Michael Thomas.
Do you believe the Saints are still a pass-happy offense?
As much as they were last year.
But not as much as they were, say, 2 or 3 years ago.
No, certainly not. But that Michael Thomas hasn't benefited from that.
Well, so Thomas had more targets last year than any player has ever had under Drew Brees in New Orleans. He is tied, in fact, with Jimmy Graham, who also had a 149 target year. But the fact that he only caught 5 touchdown passes was crazy, but the fact that Drew Brees only threw 23 touchdown passes was also crazy, which is why I think Drew Brees is going to be a really good value this year. I just think he was unlucky, and which is why I'm a little afraid of Kamara, because the touchdown rates for the running backs were so high. But, you know, Michael Thomas, I don't think he's getting 149 targets again. It just seems unlikely. Like I said, go ahead.
Like, the whole Michael Thomas had the most targets ever for a Drew Brees wide receiver kind of makes sense when you consider that Michael Thomas is the best receiver Drew Brees has ever had.
Well, he might be, but Marcus Colson was very, very good.
Colson was no Michael Thomas.
You might have to hit the brakes a little bit there, but like, I would think you're probably right, but Michael Thomas is.
I think you might be right. You think about how long Drew Brees has been playing, and then you think about all the receivers he's had. Brandon Cooks was there. I think Thomas is better than him. I think he's better than Colston too.
I would agree.
Heath might be right again.
Heath is 100%. I'm going to change the title of this show to Heath is Right.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh, maybe I'll just put that in
the Heath is right. Like, the price is right.
So yeah. Okay. Maybe he performs more like a second round pick. That's the concern here.
And I think he's going to be a particularly safe one. Like, you're just one of those picks that you're going to take and never take out of your starting lineup. And I love his schedule to begin the season. No tough matchups. Honestly, I don't think there's a tough one till maybe after their bye in week 6. And with Mark Ingram on the shelf, maybe they throw just a little bit more in those first 4 games.
I think it's either they throw just a little bit more in those first 4 games, or Terrence West has fantasy value in the first 4 weeks. Because Alvin Kamara is not getting 25 carries a game.
No.
I'm enamored with Michael Thomas. I don't know that he gets 149, but I think he gets 125 or more. And what did he have in his first year? 132 targets or something? 122. And he was 1,137 yards, 92 catches, 9 touchdowns as a freaking rookie with Brandon Cooks. I love Michael Thomas. I would love for him to be my number one pick. Michael Thomas or AJ Green?
I'm going to take Green. I think he has a similar type of positive regression headed his way.
Heath?
I'll take Thomas in PPR.
Michael Thomas or Keenan Allen?
Format matters to me here.
Why? Thomas caught 92 passes as a rookie and 104 last year.
Yeah, I think Keenan Allen may lead. I'll take Thomas in standard and Allen in PPR. I think there's a decent chance if Keenan Allen plays 16 games, he leads receivers and catches this year.
You know what? I've got him back-to-back with Allen on top in both formats. So I'm taking my comment back. I'm going to go with Keenan Allen.
Okay. Let's read some emails. FantasyFootball@CBSI.com. We also have all right, so this was the original McCaffrey voicemail. It was very strange.
This is from like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. So let me see if I can pull this up. Well, give me a moment. Let's read an email first. Dear Hank, PFT, and Big Cat.
Everybody knows.
Yeah. The Barstool dudes.
Yeah.
What do these players have in common? Julio, Gronk, Green, Kelsey, Lamar Miller, Fitzgerald, and Freeman. All were outscored by at least three kickers in my league last year. 3 points for a field goal, 4 for a 40-yarder, 5 for a 50-yarder, etc. My league refuses to change to any version of PPR and doesn't sound like they have any desire to get rid of kickers. It's a six-player keeper league. Given all of this, should I change my draft strategy to get a more elite kicker?
No. No. The only strategy that you have with kickers is when to take one in relation to the remaining DSTs.
Yeah, the one change in strategy I might suggest is you could take one in the next to last round instead of the last round.
It really depends on when your last pick is and how long you got to wait for it, and rather you settle for a DST or settle for a kicker. It's that term settling, and whichever position might be a little thinner on premier talent is the one that you'll take first.
All right,
I don't
Odie.
Think I explained that well at all.
Odie is in a two quarterback league, 10-team two quarterback league.
He's also in John Arbuckle's house.
He has the 7th pick, 10-team two quarterback. I'm guessing that Barkley, Aaron Rodgers, and DeAndre Hopkins will be there. Who do you take?
I take Hopkins.
Yeah, I do too.
He says it's non-PPR. Yeah, I think it's Hopkins too.
He didn't say that, but I.
Well, which is it then?
He didn't say either. But yeah, we're all on Team Hopkins. Rich from Central New Jersey. Hey, Leonardo, Michelangelo, Donatello, and Raphael. Do you think there is a chance that Ty Montgomery will be converted back to wide receiver?
No.
Okay.
Packers already said as much.
Tom in a major city on Lake Michigan.
Evanston.
Dear Demetrius Harris, Mike Reinfeldt, and Bob Bathurst. I think they're all from University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I had to Google this earlier. I want to get your opinion on roster limits in fantasy and if they change your approach to a draft. I'm in a 12-team, two-quarterback league. We start two skill positions each, but only one DST, one kicker, and flex. We can only roster, it looks like, one backup quarterback, one backup tight end, four running backs, four wide receivers, but whatever. Should I avoid handcuffing and more boom-bust players due to their roster restraints? Is there one position I should look to fill my limit on before another? So he has to start two of every position, and he can only roster three quarterbacks, three tight ends, four running backs, and four wide receivers.
I would avoid handcuffing. I would not avoid boom-bust players. I might be more likely to target them, because if everybody can only have four running backs, there will be more running backs available on the waiver wire. Also, I think he was asking our opinion on roster limits, and I hate them.
Yeah, they're terrible. They're terrible. Yeah, why would you constrict your owners and your league to something like this?
So much so that I don't even like being forced to draft a kicker. If there's waivers before the season starts, you should not be forced to draft a kicker.
But you would force a roster one in week one.
Right. Which means yes. You got to cut somebody you draft.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. No, I agree.
But
I
if
like
you're drafting
too.
In the middle of July, I want to go through camp with an extra lottery ticket on my team.
Yeah, I like that. All right, let's go to the voicemails, 954-689-3199. Here was the original McCaffrey email.
Jesus. Let me tell you a couple, three things. You got some You got some McCaffrey? McCaffrey?
We just had no idea what he was talking about. And then I think this is a spoof of that.
Hey, Heisenberg. I got a couple, three things to tell you. You got to be kidding me. Kerryon Williams? Whoever the hell. Sixth round? You like that value? I don't like this value. I'm getting wide receivers. You got some and you lazy. Let me tell you, my man, you're going to be hurting. If you keep drafting McCaffrey, what are you kidding me? You got some McCaffrey?
So yeah, now we have a thing.
I don't think that was a parody. I think that was the same guy.
I think it was a different guy. Heath, same guy, different guy. Heath is probably right.
Same guy.
Sounds like the same guy to me.
It was a different guy.
And I agree. I don't think you should draft Kerryon Williamson.
There you go. All right, let's hear some more. This is from, oh, he'll tell us in the voicemail.
Hey, guys, this is Bradford from Chicago. Go Bears, go Cubs. Love the show. Got a keeper question for you. I'm in a 12-person PPR league. I'm choosing between 8th round for Marvin Jones Jr. or 11th round for Chris Hogan. And I was wanting to know what you thought. Who's the better value? Thanks, guys. Appreciate the show. Have a good one.
8th round, Marvin Jones. 11th round, Chris Hogan.
I'm taking Jones. I like the short-term track record and the likelihood that things aren't going to change and how Detroit's offense operates. Not that New England's offense is going to change much, but I don't see Hogan as a big breakout candidate like a lot of other people do.
Yeah, it's close. I definitely like Jones a lot more than I like Hogan. I'm not sure. I got 3-round difference.
But it's so late, it doesn't really matter.
I'll say Jones, but I could understand Hogan.
Do you think if Eisenberg were here, he'd say Hogan?
I don't get that.
The call that we just got.
Hey, Heisenberg.
The voicemail. Hey, Eisenberg?
Heisenberg? Heisenberg.
I got a couple three things.
Turn on Heisenberg, you said. Turn on Breaking Bad for once in your life.
I thought he was saying Eisenberg.
He was
like
saying
James.
Heisenberg, you putz. All right, this is our next one.
He's
talking to James.
I'm right in your putz.
Turtle and drama. This is Evan calling from Portland, Oregon. Really enjoying the segments you guys are doing on first-round draft picks. Got really pumped to hear you were going to do one on Melvin Gordon. A lot of people probably consider him a borderline first-round pick, so I got really excited until I heard that segment. Pretty half-assed attempt at it. Pretty much a whole lot of hate about being under 4 yards per carry. I get that, but not a whole lot of content in there about his current situation. I think Hunter Henry being out of there can elevate it. Yeah, I think you guys need to do a little bit of a do-over on that one. Like to hear that the first 8-9 weeks of the season have some good matchups for him. Adam, your reply to that was, okay. And then you were ready to move on. Do me a solid. Let's hear a little bit more about Melvin Gordon.
That does sound like something I would say. I'm sure I was trying to move the show along. Okay, and then we moved on.
That's your transition is okay.
That's the only... Yeah, isn't that a beautiful transition? That's the only thing I can say bad about Melvin Gordon is that he has not been good on a per-carry basis.
But he's made up for it in every other way possible.
Yeah, I like Melvin Gordon quite a bit.
Yeah, I have no problem taking him as a first-rounder. I consider him a first-rounder.
I'm glad we're getting a little bit more in-depth with him.
But now I feel like I want to take Dalvin Cook over Melvin Gordon.
Yeah, as much as I love Dalvin Cook, I'm not doing that.
I think Gordon will catch more passes, though.
I will take Dalvin Cook over Melvin Gordon.
PPR as well?
I will take Melvin Gordon over Dalvin Cook in PPR.
All right, two more voicemails.
Beer, meat, cheese, beans, and Greek yogurt. This is Malcolm from California calling. And I've been doing a lot of mock drafts lately and always ending up with Derrick Henry or Amari Cooper in my flex spot. So I just want to get you guys' take on this year, wide receiver versus running back in the flex spot, either PPR or standard, and that specific scenario that I end up with. Would you rather have Derrick Henry or Amari Cooper this year as a flex? Thanks, guys. You're the best.
Yeah, so, okay, I don't know how on earth Derrick Henry and Amari Cooper are your flexes, but just in general, who would you guys rather have?
In PPR, Cooper.
Yep.
And in
non-PPR, standard, Henry. It's really that close.
How about half PPR?
I might lean toward Cooper in a half PPR.
I think I probably would too, but it's almost a push.
Yeah. But it is a good question about what to do with your flex, running back, receiver.
And I think we answered it the best way we could. In case of other than really rare situations where you just maybe start your draft with 3 stud running backs, for example.
That's the thing is, like, if you start with 3 running backs,
then you're going to use one in your flex. It's
what you need to make sure of. And the draft I did that in, I started with Le'Veon Bell, Devontae Freeman, and Christian McCaffrey in a PPR draft. So McCaffrey is my flex. I think the way you need to look at it is, am I okay visualizing this as Christian McCaffrey is my number one receiver, and my number two receiver is my flex.
Yeah. Right. As more and more running backs start catching passes, and a lot of passes, they become more attractive flex options in PPR.
But yep. And that's a trend that's not going away across the league.
Right.
You're going to see a lot of it this year.
Cool. The only thing is I would rather have a guy like – I would rather have a wide receiver who has more touchdown potential than someone like Chris Thompson, you know, basically is only going to catch passes personally.
Right, but Chris Thompson isn't a consideration in the first six rounds.
Oh, I bet he is for some people in PPR.
He was in our pick by pick. I think he went in the sixth round in a PPR draft. I would not. I agree with Dave that he's not one of my considerations either.
Guys, have a great weekend, huh? Will
you? You too, Adam.
Thank you, great
Adam. This is my last podcast for a week.
For a week, big deal. We'll be back.
I'll see
after
you in
that.
2 weeks, bud.
All right,
I'm going to be here all week next week, Adam. You keep bringing the Heath is Right. I'll keep
me
coming
and you.
To the podcast.
We should book. Yo, we should get Scott Fish on next week.
Yes.
Yeah, we should do that. We should get some guests on. All right, that is Heath is Right. Dave is on the jury, and Adam Azer is making it to the bathroom on time. Thank you for listening, everybody. Have a great weekend.
I'm not excited. You ended it with talking about you going to the bathroom.
Yeah, well, it's
what are you doing?
Goodbye.
Whoa.
Goodbye.